Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
All right, tomorrow on The Fan, Utah-Oregon Pac-12 championship game. And while some of you may be tuning in to hear Joey Harrington in studio tomorrow at 5:30, it's interesting to note.
You will be mistaken.
You will be. You will hear Oregon Oregon playing Utah. So Joey is in a day early. It is the great Joseph H. Harrington.
With a strong sweater game yet again.
This is a sweatshirt sweater.
Oh. Yeah. Well, it looks very soft.
Okay, can I reveal? Okay, first of all,
you got my initials wrong.
Joseph J. Harrington.
J. Joseph Harrington.
My bad.
I'm a John Joseph.
The third, Esquire.
No, not at all.
Can we reveal?
I still don't know what Esquire means exactly.
It's a magazine.
not a bad magazine. I got it free on a credit card offer, but you know, I don't know. Like when you hear like Ted Theodore Logan Esquire, I think
he's the editor.
I think it's like sir, or like, I don't think it's like an official title. I think anyone can be Esquire, but
I want to be Esquire,
but I'm not certain.
Do you want to be?
Yeah.
Well, and he's got a good name for it.
I think that's a sweet name.
Because he could go I. Everett Ropp.
Yeah.
Esquire, and that is a good Esquire name.
I.
Ropp Esquire. We'll just call you Ropp Esquire.
I love that. Can we reveal something?
Yeah, what do you got?
I would like to see, I'm just going to ask, if we can, because Joey's a very well-dressed man.
Yeah.
Can we reveal your secret to dress shirts and sweaters?
You mean the fact that I get them at Old Navy?
Yeah, let's talk about that for a second. Joey Harrington is dressed to the nines every time he comes in here.
He is a sharp,
you look great.
You are a sharp dressed man.
And you revealed to us once off the air that you do shop at Old Navy and you get all your shirts at once and then you just take them to a tailor and you save.
You get tailor Old Navy shirts.
Because it's like I'm in between, like I'm not a large or I'm not a medium, you know, you just kind of like that in between.
Sure.
So it's like, well, okay. I'll go, you know, find the Old Navy shirts that are on sale for like 6 1/4.
Yeah.
Right, and they're great because you can just wear them around
every
day.
You're talking $6.25.
Well, sometimes you'll pay like 17, like when they're full price, they're like $17.
He waits for the BOGO offers though.
But then like you find the sales, and they're like, you know, $9.50 for a shirt that like you don't feel bad knocking around in a shirt.
Yeah.
So then you know, but if it's a little big, then it's like, well, you know what? I'll just take it down the street, and you know, there's a little alteration place down the street, and you know, take it in for $10, and now you got like a dress shirt, or you know, what looks to be a
custom
dress shirt,
yeah.
But it's like a knock around, like you know, you don't feel bad like wrecking it up for $19.
I love that. That's balling on a budget shopping tips from Joey Harrington. It's great. And then
this is actually, again, this was like a,
that's a
I
sweater.
Got this like 4 years ago, but where it's some of like an outlet rack store, but it's a Pendleton. And I was like, heck yeah, like support local. Same thing though. Like
Pendleton is great.
Yeah. But it was like, you know, $12, and then you take it down to the tailor and just like,
it.
You know,
see,
now you have a $22 sweater.
See, he's onto something because he is way greater than I and is way more wealthy than me. But like, I like Pendleton and I really like Filson stuff, but you spend a lot of money to look like a sassy janitor. Like it's, it's like $100 and $115 for like
it's a look.
And it's a great shirt, but at the same time, it's a bit much.
Yeah, the irony of that, all that outdoor stuff, it's like, oh, I look rustic and go outdoors. Mm-hmm. But the moment you go outdoors, you ruin what you're actually wearing.
Yes.
So I just dropped $145 and now it's stained with like mud and moss and sap. And it's like, you know, what's the point?
Filson is my favorite clothing company ever, based out of Seattle. They just make the best.
Seattle sucks.
They make the best stuff. But I laugh whenever I get their catalog because it's like these Alaskan fishermen and it's just these woodsmen sort of the people. And they do, you cannot buy anything from Filson that's less than $100.
No.
It just doesn't.
But it lasts forever.
I guess, but at the same time, like, who's out in the middle like of an elk hunt in your Alaskan guide shirt that you spent $145 on? I'm not fixing my motorcycle in a $145 Filson thing.
Yeah.
It's like the most farcical ad of all time.
Hence why if I do Navy, find that stuff, I found it at the outlet or I go to Old Navy.
Yeah.
What do you do for shoes? Real quick.
I wear them.
I know, but where do you get them?
All over the place. Where mostly Nike.
Yeah, that's what I thought.
I stocked up on a lot of like Cole Haan stuff before they sold off from Nike when I was still playing. Just, you know, thinking ahead.
All right, well, there's shopping tips from Joey.
Yeah. There you go.
Fashion Weekly.
Yeah. It is Thursday. Joey Harrington in studio a day early, courtesy BMW Portland. We'll do two segments, so we'll have time to dive into a lot of stuff here. But Worry Meter, the patented 1080 The Fan Joey Harrington Worry Meter for Oregon, Utah. We're going to go scale.
Okay. Don't be doing some like nonsensical scale and screw it up again.
Yeah,
this
is really straightforward.
Okay.
Minus 44 to 4 by 4s.
Oh.
Worry meter.
My worry meter, I'm going to put it at negative 4.
That's pretty worried.
That's pretty high.
That's worried.
And here's why. It's different than... my worry is different than it has been in weeks past. It's a different kind of worry. It's not a, oh man, we're looking really, really good. I hope something screwy doesn't happen. This is 2 weeks in a row. 2 weeks ago where we look like, you know, the stuff you find on the bottom of your shoe for two and a half quarters.
Yeah.
And then last week where we just looked really flat.
Yeah.
I'm worried because these last 2 weeks have not been trending in the right direction to be playing. I don't think even arguably this is going to be the best team that they play all year.
Agreed.
Period.
And I put that with Auburn as well. This is the best team they've played.
Yes, exactly. Yeah. Exactly. This Utah team is for real.
And the other side of it is not only have you not played well the last 2 weeks, the last 8 weeks, Utah is crushing people.
Yeah, and it's they have been doing the step up every single week the trend that Oregon had been on since the Colorado game all the way until Arizona State and then all of this Arizona State then it's a family show so we'll keep it like that, but that is what they have been doing every single week, and they're doing it the way that Oregon wants to do it, defense and running the football. Yeah. We've talked about it the last couple weeks. This is the best defense they'll see, and this is the best running back that they will see all year.
And Huntley is kind of doing the same thing, where maybe the numbers aren't... there really are a good comp with Oregon, because... Like with Herbert, you may say, well, the numbers aren't exactly like eye popping, like with what Tua would be. They're better than Huntley's numbers, but they're asking him to be efficient, and they're asking him to play a role as opposed to maybe take over the team. So they really are kind of mirror images of each other a little bit.
I would say I would agree with that. I would agree with that in principle. He is a much different type of player than Justin is, though, right? He's going to be quicker. He's not as natural a passer.
Yeah.
I would feel much more comfortable as a coach putting the ball in Justin's hands and saying, go throw the ball and win a game.
Yeah, neither side wants to throw it 40 times.
Yeah, but I think if you had to throw it 40 times, then Justin would be the guy to do it, not Huntley.
Yes.
Does nobody being in the stands affect the players?
Yeah.
Yeah. Talk about that. Did you ever have a game like that? Where you're like, it seems like a big game, but then you run out on the field and it's wet.
I don't get it. Look, I don't understand the Pac-12 championship game. I don't understand I understand the financial aspect. I understand setting up a quote-unquote championship. I understand the direction that college football has gone, but I think it's stupid.
Yeah.
I mean, it really is.
And they put
this
in a place that people don't want
to be. It's nonsensical, the game itself. You're simply creating another opportunity for players to get injured. You're simply to make money. And then you put it at a place, at a time, you know, at a place that nobody's going to go, you know, nobody in the Bay cares about what happens between Utah and Oregon. And you're putting it at Friday evening at 5 o'clock when your target market is just going to be getting on the road, coming home from work. I mean, it is absolutely nonsensical, everything about this game, but you know, what do you do?
Do you think that it's better when they move it to Vegas? It's going to be in the new Vegas stadium.
No.
You think it's the same?
It's the same thing because there's no value to this game if you're a fan, right? It's playoff. That's going to, you know, you essentially have, you know, kind of four choices. If you do make the playoff that year that we did with Marcus, the discussion was, well, do you go to the first semifinal?
Yeah.
Because most people don't have the disposable income to go to four separate games. Pac-12 championship game, said bowl game, hopefully the Rose Bowl, semifinal and championship, right? Yeah. So now if you get to the playoff, you have to decide between semifinal and championship. The fact that you have a playoff devalues the Rose Bowl completely. I mean, I've never seen a fan base or I've never seen a season in which the Rose Bowl was so poorly thought of, or let's just say not even thought of at all. I mean, yep. It's an afterthought for crying out loud. This is the Rose Bowl that we're talking about. And then to throw on a Pac-12 championship game, it's like that's the fourth game on the list of potential, end of season playoff type stuff. I wouldn't want to go.
No, it's the easiest one to take out because you say if we go to the Pac-12 title game and we lose, then why the hell did I spend money to go there?
Yes.
And if I go there and we win, there's other games that I want to go to and now I can't because I just blew my wad going down to San Francisco and playing in a crappy environment with bad weather. So I'm with you. I don't understand why anyone would go. And to your point about the Rose Bowl, it's interesting. When Chris Peterson just got done retiring, obviously, which happened a couple days ago, I saw in his press conference that he said that. He said, I spent my entire life dreaming about going to the Rose Bowl. And he said, I got there last year and it didn't mean anything to me. And I get that some of that is burnout and whatever, but I think there is a real element to that. That there's a guy that spent a lifetime in coaching and playing, trying to get to the Rose Bowl, and he got there, and the game didn't mean a damn thing.
I completely agree. I've told you the story that I remember being out on the outer concourse with my dad when I was 11. It was Shin Beckler and it was Michigan and USC in the 89 Rose Bowl. And I did the quick little math of the plaques of all the MVPs of the Rose Bowl and 1, 2, 3 all the way down. And the one at the bottom right hand corner was my senior year. I said, Dad, that one's going to be me. And I remember that like it was yesterday. That's all you grew up wanting to do was play in the Rose Bowl.
There's nothing wrong with the Fiesta Bowl, but it wasn't the Rose.
No. Trivia question. Who's the only school in the history of the conference to win back-to-back conference championships and go to the Rose Bowl neither time?
Yeah. You guys.
Oregon.
Yeah.
No.
Mm. So when you're a player, it's wet. There's nobody in the stands. That does. Do you have to guard against affecting the team in this game? Because it's a big game.
Sure, you do. But both teams have it.
Both teams have it.
I mean, it's not like it's not an advantage or a disadvantage for one of the teams because both of them are in the same situation. It is simply a different atmosphere than if you were playing anywhere, either at home or on the road, because even if you're on the road, you have the energy from the opposing crowd and the feeling of, hey, it's just us, locked together on our sideline. No one's getting through us kind of thing. Or if you're at home, you've got the support of the home crowd. But at a place like this, it's just meh.
Let's talk about the Chris Peterson retirement with Joey Harrington in studio, but we'll do it next on The Fan. All right, back in studio with Joey Harrington a day early because Utah, Oregon will be here on The Fan tomorrow.
And I just
tomorrow.
Couldn't wait to see you guys.
Yeah. It was Jones.
Mostly it was, I just called and said, hey, can you guys schedule a Pac-12 championship game so I can see Isaac and Sukade early?
Done. It happens.
Yeah. He's got that kind of clout.
It happens.
He makes phone calls. Stuff happens.
And we're here. Look at this. So, Peterson.
Love him. Love that man.
Chris Peterson, why?
He was my wide receiver coach when I was at Oregon.
Oh, I forgot about that connection.
Pete is one of the most solid human beings that you will ever come across.
It seems it. This all seems genuine, right? Like sometimes these coaches are full of crap. A lot of times they're full of crap.
Yeah.
Or these things happen and you're like, there's something else going on or this or that.
No.
This all seems real genuine because he's real genuine.
He is as solid a human being as you will find. It's interesting. Pete has perspective, I think, more than any college coach out there, because the reason he left Oregon, it was right before my senior year, and his son, his two-year-old at the time, was running through the stands at Autzen and tripped and fell and hit his head. They take him into the hospital and do a quick scan, and they found a brain tumor. And so Pete left coaching. And, as any of us would do to be with his son and to get through this with his family. And once Sam was healthy and on the road to recovery, that's when he got back into coaching. And Dirk Cutter, who was our former coordinator, was at Boise. And so he brought Pete over to Boise and the rest is history. But what it gave him was and not that he didn't have it beforehand because he's just that kind of person, but it gave him a perspective that football is not the end all be all of human existence. And a lot of coaches live that way because it's all they have in their life. Mm-hmm. It's what defines them. It's what, it's their legacy. It's without football, you know, who are they? That's not Pete. I mean, he is first and foremost a good person. And secondarily, he is a fantastic football coach.
And I know this caught a lot of people by surprise, but in fact, I was having lunch today with someone who, a booster, let's say that, of the UW program. And he was telling a story because people were asking him about that. And he said when he first got the job, so it was his first year there, and he was talking with who's the AD now, Jen Cohen, mm-hmm. at the time was an associate or whatever. Right. And they were at some sort of, you know, fundraising mixer sort of thing. And people were saying, oh, man, the heights he's going to take us to. And, you know, he'll be here for 15 years. And he says, I never told anyone about this, but she goes, between me and you, she's like, this guy won't be here that long. And they were like, what? And she said, that guy's got other things that he's going to do. Mm-hmm. And that was 5 years ago. And he said, he thought about that. The moment that he resigned, he just kind of smiled and was like, she knew it. That the people that were close to him maybe didn't see it coming right now, but I don't think there were a lot of people up there that believed that he was going to be there for 15 years. I think they knew what kind of man he was. And that eventually there was going to be an expiration light on how much he wanted to grind on this.
Yeah, I don't think people realize the life commitment it takes to be a college football coach. Yeah. I mean, I kid you not. You know, the example I always give is Jeff Tedford. You know, Tedford was as good a coach as I've been around, as I was around in, you know, 20 years of playing football. But he slept at his office from Sunday to Thursday. He had, when he was the O coordinator at Oregon with us, he had a blow up air mattress. And then, you know, when he went to Cal, he had, you know, had him build a Murphy bed into the wall of his office. You know, you're the head coach, you can have him do that. But he literally slept at his office from Sunday to Thursday. And he'd go home on Thursday night. And he would see his kids that night. And then Friday, we would go to the team hotel. So he was gone. After the game on Saturday, he'd come back. And then he'd be at the office by 6 a.m. on Sunday, breaking down the game film, only to sleep there till the coming Thursday.
Now through recruiting on top of it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you don't... Now try to have a family. Yeah. Now try to have a normal life. And if you if you lose a game, you're not working hard enough. I mean, there's so much that the general public does not see that goes into, you know, if you knew how the sausage was made, right? Yeah. So I don't, not that I don't blame him for losing, but for leaving, but I'm not surprised at all because it is a grind. And for someone who has more at his core than just football, that makes sense.
Exactly, because the Sabans of the world can't walk away because there's nothing else.
Yeah.
It's all consuming.
Well, Paterno was like that.
Yeah, Paterno's like that.
He walks away, he's dead.
Well, they call it the Patton thing, right? It's like General Patton was like, the day I leave the military is the day I'm going to die. And Bobby Bowden was quoted as saying that. Bob mm-hmm. Knight was one of those guys who was like, dude, the day I leave, I know I'm going to die and like no purpose.
Yeah.
And if you're not like that, especially now with the time commitment, with recruiting and the money you make, you don't have to coach until you're 65 anymore. So, you know, I think there will be more people like him that have some perspective now with the money that are going to be able to walk away.
Bob Stoops did it.
Yeah.
Yes, but define like him, because I don't think as many people like him in terms of being not that other coaches aren't good-hearted people, right? But Pete was different. Pete is different than the majority of coaches out there. And I don't think that those type of people make it to the top of the mountain as often because they're not as cutthroat, because they're not as focused.
Yeah. They're balanced.
Exactly.
Yeah.
And you can't be balanced and make it to the top.
Yeah.
It has to be your sole focus in life.
An obsession.
Yes.
Good point.
Do we know how Chris Peterson's son is doing, Sam?
He's healthy.
Is he?
He is healthy.
Awesome. And how old is he now?
Gosh.
Well, that's got to be 20 plus years.
Well,
right?
Yeah. So Sam, I always had a feeling that once Sam left the house and went to college, that Pete might consider leaving Boise.
Yeah.
And so, you know, so Sam, I think would probably be 24,
okay.
25 maybe now. But is doing well and is healthy and,
good.
Yeah.
I can tell your general affection for him. You can tell by the look on your face that, Coach Pete means something to you.
I loved when I was calling games and we'd have a Washington game. Cause I'd just get to sit in his office and just talk and just catch up and you could, he's just one of those people that you enjoy spending time with because he's real and he's not trying to feed you something and he's not trying to put up some front of, you know, well, this is how great it's going to be and watch this and here's all the things I'm going to do. No, he just sits and talks, asks how, you know, remembers mom and dad and asks how the, you know, brothers are doing. And he's just a good person.
And I don't want to be the cynical one because I know it comes across this way sometimes, but most of my experience with football coaches is the exact opposite of that. Mm-hmm. And I'm not going to say that they're bad people. They're just not. Football coaches and me have never seen eye to eye, maybe. I've never appreciated that sort of mentality. And so when you do come across someone like that, you hold on to it. I had one coach at BYU that was like that to this day that I absolutely love him. You know who Wilcox to me,
Justin,
is like this. Yep. Whenever I've had the pleasure of sitting with Justin, you know, 15, 20 times over the years. And I can count on one hand the number of times we've talked about football.
Yeah.
And he is, you know, we talk about fly fishing, you talk about, you know, his family, and he's one of those guys for me that that is like that. And they are. You're right. So they are few and far between. So maybe that statement was off when I think more people will walk away because
more people may choose to leave because they're financially well off. But I don't know that those that many people. Yeah. Like Pete will actually make it to the top.
Yeah.
Another guy that was like that, I think I'm going to bring him up because I think you've mentioned him before from your NFL days, and he's in the news lately because he's probably not going to be back as the Cowboys coach. Didn't you say this Jason Garrett was like this?
Liked him. He and Mike Mularkey were my two favorite coach. I had them both in Miami. Jason Garrett was my quarterback coach in Miami, and Mike Mularkey was my offensive coordinator.
So what did you like about Jason Garrett? Because a lot of people don't think he's a very good coach, just as the head coach of the Cowboys, but
he's one of those guys that he was obviously talented enough to make it in the NFL. Sure. and was a great football player, but it never came natural to him. Right. Or I should say it's not like he was an Elway or a Marino where he could sit on his back foot and throw an 18-yard comeback, you know, in his sleep. He was somebody who had to figure out how to get things done in a way that wasn't necessarily physical, right? So he was able to think. Those are the guys that make the best coaches, right? Because if Marino gets up there and is like, you know, yeah, what do you mean? You take the snap and, you know, you just throw it to that guy over there. Well, what do you mean you throw it to that guy over there? I got a rush coming off the edge. I'm getting pushed back by my O-line and I got a safety driving this, you know, from the weak side. How can I throw that ball? He's like, I don't know. You just throw it.
Yeah, because get it in.
You just get it in. Like that's the answer so often. But what Jason did, he's like, okay, well, look, how do you get your feet in a position to throw that ball? Where's your soft spot in the pocket? What tells you ahead of time that you're going to be able to throw that ball? Who's the guy that tips it off that sees I'm going to leave that open, right? So there was a whole thought process that Jason incorporated that didn't necessarily have to do with the physical aspect of the delivery of the ball. And that's what made him a great coach. That and you could tell he cared. Right. There was a connect. Like he was personally he had a vested interest in your success, not because it enhanced his career, but because he cared about you. Right. There was a relationship. There was a, you know, it was
just
a friendship.
Sounds like he's just a good guy. This was in Miami.
That he was my quarterback coach in Miami.
So I want you to think about people listening. So Saban was, think about how many coaches you went through before you finally got a guy that taught you this extra layer of the game.
Well, that was what Tedford taught, right? So that's what got me there. That's what Tedford taught. And then there was this gap between Tedford and Jason Garrett of just, well, how do I, it's the
Detroit,
story.
Your whole,
it's the story I told you where I have to throw an 18-yard comeback on the backside, but I've got a free rusher. And I asked the question, well, can I slide the protection? Can I, you know, can I somehow protect myself? Do I have a side adjust? Can I make it, you know, slide the line over there? And they said, no. I said, why not? They said, because that's not what Bill Walsh did. Instead of saying, well, yes, here's how, here's what you could think about. There's this gap between Tedford and Jason Garrett.
Trent Dilfer talked about this all the time.
How many years was that between Tedford
and... Five.
So that was all your years in Detroit, basically.
Trent Dilfer talked about this all the time. We used to have him on, and he said the biggest misnomer about football is that the NFL has the best coaching.
Oh.
And he said that he said some of the worst coaching in the world is done at the position level of NFL teams.
I was begging my quarterback coaches in Detroit to hammer down my fundamentals. Like, I would say to them before every practice, please keep an eye on my fundamentals. I know I tend to drop the ball. I know my stride on my drop gets bouncy at the end. You know, like, help me on these things. Never.
So that's mainly because they're used to just coaching like guys that just can do everything that they ask, right?
No,
it's lazy for them.
I would say that they are more used to coaching. Here's your progression: A1 to 2 to 3. You go your drive, your basic, to your check down. And I don't care how you get it there, but you need to get it there. They know the book. They are handed a book, and it says, here's 2-jet flanker drive, and your progression is drive to basic to check down. And if you get, you know, somebody who comes free, then you can throw the post. Right. But if you throw the post, you better hit it. They don't teach how to get the ball there. They simply teach that is where it goes.
Isn't that what David Carr said? I mean, I talked about this. David Carr had a good article in the New York Times.
He just said that the coaching he got, he said it wasn't until he was already basically out of the league before someone taught him how to properly
read a defense
and diagnose it and being able to solve problems. And he goes, I spent 7 years before someone actually sat down and explained it to me.
I knew how to diagnose a defense from Tedford, but I couldn't, for the first 4 years of my career, I couldn't get a head coach to allow me to do that. Yeah. It was scripted A to B to C, because that's what Bill Walsh did.
Yeah. And I remember speaking of like not being a physical talent, you know, marginal guy, but you know, I was there, and I remember my first camp in Denver. The two defensive tackles were Trevor Price and Chester McLaughlin. And last time I checked, it was like 9 Pro Bowls between the two of them. And both had arms that were longer than my legs. And I remember just literally not being able to do anything against either one of those guys and sitting there in the film and just getting just my ass reamed and asking, what am I supposed to do about that? And the response was, figure it out.
Mm-hmm. Block him.
What am I supposed to do with a guy who puts his hand in my chest and my hands can't touch him and he physically drives me back? And your response was, figure it out. And I'm being like, well, yes.
What do you want me to do about that? I want you to become a radio talk show host.
Yeah.
Offensive line coach, though. I mean, come on. Couldn't I coach the offensive line? Yeah. Like, hey, block those guys.
Figure it out. Hey,
what's the matter
with you? Yeah, no.
Joey, good combo. Thank you. Yeah. Joey Harrington.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
Joe Harrington each Friday, normally, courtesy of BMW Portland, Portland's only BMW dealer where relationships matter. Go to BMWPortland.com. Joey coming in a day early because Utah, Oregon will be live here on The Fan tomorrow in his time slot. Will we talk to you next week?
Next week, of course.
Let's talk again
anywhere.
Next week.
Story You're time.
You are stuck with me through the Super Bowl, contractually.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Juicy. Oh, hell, they didn't tell me that.
I'm kind of excited about this
through
now.
The Super Bowl. Yeah. Good stuff. Joey, each Friday, 5:30. Let's club next on The Fan.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.